Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We want to welcome in any new listeners who are joining us for the very first time. We're happy to have you on board. For those of you who have been here from the start, you already know the drill. We live and die by this team just like the rest of you, and we make no apologies for that. I am your host, Jason Kelly. I'm coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find us at Bastards_Boston. Joining me tonight on the show from Reading, Pennsylvania is Micah Storms. Micah, how are you?
I'm terrific. I'm hanging out with my dog, Cooper. Hopefully he doesn't make too much noise during the recording, but I'm doing well. Excited to talk about one of my favorite players. He's quickly become one of my favorite players, but I'll leave the name for later. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And also joining us tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. How's it going, Terry?
Causing trouble as always on the Twitter sphere, running my mouth about Hein Bloom and pissing off the Bloominati.
Yep. And watch out, folks. He's coming to Threads soon, so it won't be safe there either.
We do have a Threads account because everything has to be political and we need to separate things now. So we're on there. I don't know what'll become of it, but it's going to be a duplication. Is that a word? Of our Twitter account. So.
Yeah, I set one up for myself, but it's like, I don't know. It's, I think I've sent out one thread. I've threaded once. Is that the terminology we're using? I'm not really sure yet. Yeah.
Just think we're going to be known as trendsetters because 10 years from now when Threads is bigger than Twitter, we'll all look back and we'll be like, we were one of the first ones on that app.
Yeah. The only tweet I have is, you know, the Rangers had that 6-run seventh inning, and I said some teams have bullpen games, you know, like the Red Sox are going to have two against Toronto, and then the Texas Rangers have bullpen innings. We had to watch Bruce Bochy painfully walk out to the mound. Get that guy a scooter, okay? Come on. Don't make him walk. And, you know, he's baseball royalty. He's won 3 rings. He's the only one since Joe Torre to do that, I think. Francona could have done it had Cleveland won it in 2016. But, yeah. But anyway, so that's my only Threads tweet so far. Is it called a tweet? I don't even know what it is. Like, what is it?
Well, yeah, I don't think you can call them tweets. I think they literally are just called threads.
It's just like a thread. All right. Yeah. All right. I don't know how to do it, but, you know, screw it.
Well, we'll find out. We'll see if it sticks around. I'm not sure. But, it was tough watching Bruce Bochy have to just march out to the mound like 18 times during that game. That
it was 4 in one inning. Cool. Like, that's confirmed. Like, 4 times. And I'm like, oh, my God. My knees were hurting watching him do that.
They should, yeah. They should just let him, like, sit in the dugout and just have him motion and be like, come in. Like, I'm not getting up for you. You bring me the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh, rough. But unlike Bruce Bochy and the Texas Rangers, the Red Sox, at least in one of these games, did not have to make that many pitching changes because Brian Bayo was on the mound, and he was once again just dealing. Not a huge, like, high strikeout game for him, but kept that Texas Rangers lineup in order. He's been a star for this team early on. He's taken that really big step forward that a lot of fans were hoping that he would. And we talked about him on our last show a couple of days ago that he is now your ace. He's your ace going forward. You know, you can argue him or Paxton, but Bayo is going to be your ace for years down the line. And he is now, you know, we've been waiting for a while, but he is now a pitching prospect that has developed and has arrived and is taking that ace role, you know, by force. So it's been awesome to watch. And, you know, it raises a lot of questions around him in terms of should the Red Sox consider potentially talking with him this offseason about a contract extension? Because, you know, at some point, he's going to hit arbitration years. And then at some point after that, he's going to hit free agency. And in between there, you can always get to him earlier before that price tag gets too high. We've seen other teams do it. It's not completely unprecedented, a little more rare for pitchers, but it does happen. So, and we don't know exactly what the number would be. You know, we have a few comparisons we can draw to, but the ultimate question is, if you were Chaim Bloom, if you were the Boston Red Sox, would you approach Brian Bayo this offseason about a contract extension? Micah, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think the answer is 100%. I think if Bloom is still here, I think this is probably one of the top priorities of the offseason, because if Bayo is willing to sign an extension and there's no opt-outs, then I would absolutely be very aggressive. If Bayo is interested in signing an extension with the idea that there could be opt-outs in the deal, I'm not sure I would sign an extension, just because you lose the ability to gain those cheap years for extra years tacked on to the end. So if there's an opt-out in a deal, I think for a pitcher, I don't think I would do it. I would just ride out the deal and then look to extend him, you know, 3 years from now. And if he wants to have an opt-out or so, then maybe you deal with that later down the road. But I wouldn't give up cheap, controllable years for, you know, a 5 or 6 year deal with opt out, because he already is going to have 5 more years after this deal. So you might as well take advantage of the cheap years while you can, if there's going to be an opt out. But I would definitely push for no opt out. And I think if we look at a couple of deals that have happened, I think two happened in the offseason. Spencer Strider signed a 6 year, $75 million deal. There is an option, a team option for a 7th year that brings the total to $97 million. So I think you definitely can look at that deal. And then the second name that came to mind was Christian Javier from the Astros. He signed a 5-year, $64 million deal. So I think you kind of have a framework somewhere probably in between those two. I don't think a Bayo extension would exceed a Strider extension, just because Strider has become the probably Cy Young favorite in the National League. I don't think Bayo is quite at that level, even though he has been outstanding in the last month or so. I don't think he's quite on that level. But there's always that idea that the player, the next player up for a contract, is kind of his job is to kind of beat the previous deal. So I guess there could be some competition there. But I would be interested in an 8 year deal, something around there. So you get an extra two to three years and you get Bayo for his age 29, 30, and maybe 31 season. Anything after that, I think would be super risky. I mean, there's always going to be risk with pitchers. But I like the idea of committing a long-term deal to a 24-year-old that doesn't have a ton of innings, as opposed to what the Red Sox did with Chris Sale, where they gave him, he was 28, 29 at the time of the deal, and they gave him another 5 years when he had over 1,000 innings on his arm. So I like the idea of investing in a young arm that's not overworked. But it really it's tough. There's so many deals to look at in terms of position players, but there might be two or three deals, recent deals, where they completely pay out even some of the pre-arbitration years. There's just not a lot of pitchers who have done it recently. So I think it's a challenge for Bloom to find the right deal, but this absolutely should be a priority going forward, because if you can get an extra year or two with club options, I mean, that could be huge down the road, especially if Bayo becomes the pitcher that I think many Red Sox fans believe he could become.
Terry, what do you think?
I think all Red Sox fans are all for an extension for Bayo, and there is always inherently going to be risk when you're signing a starting pitcher. Now, when you go back to, you could go back to John Lester. I mean, there wasn't really that much risk. You knew he could pitch in Boston. You'd seen him pitch in the postseason a couple of times, win a couple of rings for you. And he had so many years in a row with 30 or more starts, 200 plus innings. So, you know, that's what you hope Brian Bayo would be. But I would take the risk. I would take the risk, and I would probably want him for at least 8 years, like Micah said. The other somewhat comparable signing that's happened in the last year was Spencer Strider with the Atlanta Braves. And that deal has always kind of confused me, because they gave him 6 years, $75 million with a team option tacked on, so it could be worth seven. And if I'm looking at it right, without the team option, that deal only takes him one more year beyond what his free agent deal would be. What's the point in that? You're paying him a lot more money, you know, throughout the life of that contract, and you only got one more year out of him. Now you can pick up that option, and then, you know, you get an extra year, but Bayo is going to be a free agent. If no extension happens at all, he's going to be a free agent in 2029. So the Red Sox have five more years after this of control over Bayo. So I think 8 years is good. Even if it's 6 years with two options put on there, if years seven and eight are the option years, fine. I mean, this is his age 24 season, essentially. He turned 24 in May. So, you know, next year could potentially be year one of the extension. So 8 years takes him through or into his age 33 season. And then how much leverage is a 33-year-old pitcher going to have, you know, in terms of, I mean, DeGrom got stupid money. That whole situation in Texas, stupid. And Bayo is probably never going to evolve into a guy like DeGrom, who's just a freak of nature. But still, I mean, I think 8 years is good. And as far as what the overall number is, you know, if you're getting into 8 years and it includes perhaps a couple options, I think you're north of 100, I think. You know, it could be in the 120 to 140 range, but I'm good with that. I'm good with that. I mean, Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer are both getting north of $40 million a year. So I'm good with paying Bayo 18 to 20 a year, you know, over the life of that deal, if that's what it averages. Sometimes it staggers out, like Spencer Strider, for instance, is only making $1 million this year, $1 million next year. Then it goes up to $4 million in 2025. Then it goes way up to $20 million in 2026. So you can stagger it out a little bit. I'm surprised he's only making $1 million the first couple of years. You know, Bayo, you know, probably would be making at least five. But it's got to be at least an 8-year deal to make it worth it for me. And as far as opt-outs, I've never heard of an opt-out in a pre-arb deal. Perhaps there has been one, but it's got to be really rare.
Yeah, I would also do it. Because I also just think a Bayo extension fits in with what the Red Sox clearly want to do, which is they want the 24, 25, 26, 27 teams to be really good and have, you know, the youth that they've developed kind of take over. Those are the years where if everything works out, Marcelo Mayer is playing shortstop for you every day. And he's, you know, he's raking at that point. Maybe Nick York is up at that point. Maybe Rafaela is up at that point. And they've already kind of done this in a weird way. They did it with Whitlock. They extended him, I think, earlier than they had to. Now, he wasn't in his pre-arb years. It was a different situation with him. He was a Rule 5 guy, injury history. So they got him for, it was like 4 over 18, tacked on a couple of club years after that. But Whitlock is under contract at least through 26. They'll probably pick up the club options for 27, 28. So that's one guy you've got. You extend Bayo, you add him to the mix. You know, Chris Sale will be gone by that point. Jansen, you know, all these other guys, their money will be off the books. You might be able to go out and add another frontline starter to mix in with them. So I just think a Bayo extension makes sense for what the Red Sox want to do, which is they kind of want to follow that Atlanta Braves model of let's extend the good young talent that we have, keep them here, buy out their arb years and keep them here for the long haul. And then let's, you know, that way we're not paying them too much. And then let's use our excess money to go get free agents, go get our own version of Matt Olson, you know, and guys like that. So I think that's the model they're trying to follow. It obviously has worked in Atlanta very well. I'm not telling you that Brian Bayo is going to be as good as Spencer Strider. I have no idea. Spencer Strider is unreal. As Mike has said, he's your NL Cy Young favorite right now, but Bayo is your best young pitcher. So it makes sense to just get it out of the way early. I agree. 7-8 years, you know, even if it goes a little bit north of 100 million, I'm okay with that because I'd rather do that than wait till he's 28, 29, then have to pay him a 5-year deal that's way too expensive and might turn into Chris Sale all over again. So, yeah, I'm with it. I'd absolutely approach him in the offseason and start following that Braves model because I think that's the new way to go.
Yeah, the thing that I was thinking about when Terry said about, like, why would the Braves do that deal if you only get one guaranteed year? I mean, technically it's two because it's a team option. But I wonder if by giving him a lot more money than he would, a lot more money earlier than he would make, would that improve the relationship between the player and the organization where that the player would be more willing to negotiate an extension past that? Because you know what, you didn't have to do that, but you did and you got something out of it, but you gave me a lot more money than I would have made because you really could have just used me and abused me essentially because they could have just threw him out there for 200 plus innings every year while he's making, you know, the bare minimum. Maybe that improves the relationship with Strider and the Braves organization. And then, you know, they can work an extension out. That was just a thought I had, but I don't really think that players and their agents really care about that, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the road from the initial deal.
I think you're right to a degree. I think it's really important to the Atlanta Braves to have a really good culture. I don't think any team in baseball embraces that more than the Braves. And I don't think any team in Major League Baseball botches that worse than the Red Sox when it comes to investing in their own guys. I mean, Bloom had a metaphorical gun to his head when that Devers deal was getting written out. And that, I mean, I wasn't positive that was ever going to happen. You know, after just days after watching Xander walk. And You mentioned the Braves, and you could call this an apples to oranges situation because one's a hitter, one's a pitcher, but they locked up Acuna on an 8-year deal worth $100 million, and then they tacked two options on the end of that to make it so I guess it'll be worth 134 if all those get picked up. But could you imagine having Ronald Acuna through his age 30 season for $134 million? It's crazy. So, you know, we've seen them, and Bayo, I mean, everybody knew Acuna was going to be a stud. I don't know where he was ranked in the top 100. I'm guessing in the top five somewhere by the time he made his debut. But and Bayo, certainly not that. But, man, just I hate to keep going to Lester, but you knew he could do it. You knew he could put the team on his back in the month of October. And you're already seeing Brian Bayo just calm as can be with runners on base, just not phased at all, not in his own head. And he's actually in the heads of the batters in the batter's box. That's where Brian Bayo is at. And I would take the risk. I would take the risk. I mean, if you lock him up to 8 years, yeah, there's probably a 60% chance or better he will have Tommy John somewhere, you know, in that window. But I would still take the risk. You know, you have Bayo signed. I don't think the luxury tax is going to be an issue going forward because we'll have reset it this year. And then Chris Sale's money, like Jason said, will be off the books. So that's going to be a big thing. And you can go sign a high-end free agent and then perhaps trade for one. So then you got Bayo, you got that free agent I was just talking about, and then you've got a nice trade acquisition, and hopefully you got someone else in the pipeline. You know, and you could still have Hauk and Whitlock here for a while. Who knows what their roles will be, but that's how you do it. That's how you build a rotation.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the player relation part of it that you guys brought up, I mean, if there's any team that needs to improve their player relations reputation, it's the Red Sox. Because, yes, they locked up Devers. It took a lot to get them to do that, but they've let a lot of guys walk out the door. You know, Lester, Mookie, Xander. And it was all because they dinked around with them on contracts and took him to arbitration and, you know, really made life difficult for those guys to the point where they wanted out, you know. And I've said that about Mookie before. Mookie didn't want to be here, not because he hated Boston or anything like that. He just didn't want to deal with the GM and the owner trying to screw him on the contracts every year. So, you know, this whole thing about getting to Bayo early and, you know, paying him more now, it's a good way of, like you said, just getting the player on your side a little bit. And the Red Sox need that because their reputation in that department has really plummeted over the last couple of years. So I think in that regard as well, it's not the only reason to do it, but it's one of the reasons to do it, is that it would really improve your reputation, amongst the players that, like, hey, we are willing to do this. We're not going to keep screwing around with guys like we did with Mookie and Xander and all those guys in the past. So I think for that reason as well, it just makes too much sense. So moving to the West Coast, to a guy who is not going to be looking for a pre-arb deal. He's going to be looking for probably the most ridiculous deal in MLB history when it comes down to it. And that's Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani obviously is a free agent after this season. People are already speculating, you know, $500 million, you know, 10 plus years, whatever it's going to be. But he will hit the market. And on ESPN, Stephen A. Smith, who admittedly does not talk baseball a lot, hardly ever, actually. It's mostly an NBA and an NFL guy. But this past week, he was talking about Shohei Ohtani and the Angels. And he made the case that he sort of started by making fun of the Angels and basically saying that nobody cares about them. People only care about the Dodgers out in LA. Nobody pays attention to the Angels. And he, in a long way, sort of said, because of that, and because of the fact that the Angels are hovering around 500, oddly enough, kind of having a very similar year to the Red Sox, they're a little bit out of the wild card, they're not going to win their division, that they should trade Shohei Ohtani at this year's deadline. And he basically, the way he stamped his case was, Shohei Ohtani is this, he's the modern era Babe Ruth. And Babe Ruth was traded too. So he's basically saying the Angels should get out ahead of it, trade Ohtani, because he's not going to sign with you in the offseason. You might as well get out from under it now. It's, you know, obviously you hear the idea of trading Shohei Ohtani and everyone goes, what? That's stupid. Why would anyone do that? But again, the Angels are teetering. They're teetering on being out of it, just like the Red Sox kind of are. You know, if they lose 5 out of 7 anytime here soon, their season could be done. So would it be smart for the Angels to get out ahead of it, realize that we're probably going to lose the guy anyway, and trade Shohei Ohtani at this year's deadline? Terry, start with you.
There's no team in Major League Baseball that's a bigger dumpster fire than the Anaheim Angels. It's what they are. I mean, you've got Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in your lineup. Two of the greatest players to play the game this century. And you can't even sniff the postseason. That's how bad the Angels are. And they have to trade him. I mean, if they can't extend him, like, try that first, obviously. if that doesn't work, if you throw $500 million at him, and I don't know how many teams really can, you know, the Yankees, they would have three DHs if they did that. You know, Stanton, eventually Judge, and then Shohei. Who's going to do it? How many teams can really pay that amount? So if the Angels go to Shohei and they say, listen, here's a half billion. I can't believe I just said that. A half billion with a B. Please stay with us. And then Shohei says no, you have to trade him. And it's going to be one of the biggest trade packages of all time, because you're giving somebody their three-hole hitter that's going to be crushing balls in October, and he's also going to be their game one starting pitcher. You know, it's going to be the biggest trade package of all time. You have to improve your organization. And, I mean, at the end of the day, Shohei's just one player. If you can get three studs in a trade, you're a better baseball team even without Shohei. One of them will hopefully be super marketable, because you could potentially be losing a lot of marketability, but you have to do it. Here's one other thing to consider. Look at what the Yankees did in 2016. They traded Aroldis Chapman to the Chicago Cubs, and the Cubs ended up getting a ring out of it, and Chapman was a big part of that, but they got Gleyber Torres back in that deal, and then they got Clint Frazier and a couple other guys, and I think, you know, there were higher expectations for Frazier, which never came to fruition, but that was considered to be, a great return. So why not go that route? Why not trade him, get that biggest trade haul of all time, and then go sign him anyway? What's wrong with that strategy? The best of both worlds. So it's an absolute no-brainer. You have to trade Shohei. And there's one person that wants it more than anyone. And you know who that is? Rob Manfred. He wants Shohei in the postseason this October.
Micah, what do you think?
Before I give my take on Ohtani, I have a question for you. Since Ohtani join the Angels. I heard this stat on the 3-0 show, which is part of the Athletic podcast feed. But since Ohtani has joined the Angels, what do you think? How many games above or below 500 the Angels are with Trout and Ohtani? What would be your guess?
Well, they've always kind of sucked. So I'm going to guess that they're under games under 500, probably like 6 or 7.
Terry?
I mean, I can't remember where they finished last year, but I don't think they've been unless it was last year, I don't think they've been above 500 for a while. So I think Jason's close. I'll say 9 or 10 just to be different.
There are 50 games under 500 since Ohtani has joined the Angels.
Oh, overall, yes. Okay.
That is a mind-boggling stat because you have two of, in my opinion, Trout and Ohtani are probably two of the greatest players in the last 25 years, if you could probably go further. I mean, Ohtani, you could argue he's the greatest player that we've ever seen just based on what he can do. And the fact that they have two players that are incredible and probably future Hall of Famers, they're 50 games under 500 when they have those guys. So I'm with you, Terry. They absolutely need to trade Ohtani because I hate that Stephen A. Smith made the comment because I agreed with him, but he probably watched 6 innings of baseball all year long, which is why I hate that I'm agreeing with him. But you have to move him, because they have one of the worst farm systems in the league. And if they bring Ohtani back, what changes? Does their outlook really change for 2024, 2025? I don't see how it changes, because Anthony Rendon is probably behind Steven Strasburg. He might, and maybe Chris Sale, he might be the worst contract in baseball. That guy needs an entire new body because he's constantly injured. Mike Trout, his best years, I would say, are probably behind him. And he's got the back injury that he's been okay with this year, but he always finds himself on the IL for extended periods of time. That's not going to improve as he gets older. I think you could make a case that they should be trading Ohtani now, and in the offseason, they should look to trade Mike Trout, because that's where this organization is. This organization has been terrible with these superstars. And if they keep them as they get older and the farm system's terrible, all they care about is having big names in their lineup. They have 3 or 4 names. It's been like that for the last decade when they signed Albert Pujols, they signed Josh Hamilton, Justin Upton. They've always had these big name superstars, but they haven't won. They have not won hardly at all in the last decade. Mike Trout has 1 career postseason hit and he's never won a postseason game. That's a crime to the baseball community and all the fans out there that they've never seen this guy have crazy moments in October. And if I'm Shohei Ohtani, you could offer me $650 million. I'm saying absolutely not, because all I'm going to be doing is playing meaningless games. And I don't want to do that. I want to play in October. And I think the Dodgers have more money than the Angels, and they can throw more money at him than the Angels. And I'm taking whatever deal to get out of the Angels organization, because that organization, unless they actually commit to just completely starting over, they are going to be the laughingstock of baseball. And they really have been over the last couple of years, because they can't win with 2 of the greatest players the game's ever seen. So sell them. I was interested to hear that you think it's going to be the craziest package that we've ever seen for a rental, because I was thinking that would it be that crazy? But I think you are right. I think you convinced me that it would be Soto's deal from last year. I think you would get a better return because of just he's must watch TV and he can do both. And I think it would be a massive haul of prospects back, which is what the Angels need.
I think in terms of the deal, so I agree. If I'm the Angels, 100%, yeah, you should trade Shohei Ohtani. And that's, again, a weird thing to say, because he is the face of baseball. I mean, he really is. So you're trading away the face of baseball. You're really pissing off your fan base, but he's not going to re-sign there. There's no way he re-signs there. Why would he? They're not going to win. That Rendon contract is an absolute albatross. They're going to be stuck with that. They signed a lot of guys this past offseason to like 1 and 2 year deals, and a lot of them haven't even worked out. Like the Brandon Drury contract hasn't worked out. Hunter Renfro's been okay there, but not great. Tyler Anderson's been okay, not great. Trout, I agree, his best years are probably behind him. At some point, Father Time is going to catch up to him. So Ohtani is not going to stay there. The Angels farm system blows. They need a hard reset, and that's how you do it. You trade a guy like Ohtani. Now, the question is, where do you send him, right? There's a lot of contending teams that would, you know, love to have Ohtani and have really good prospects, but like, would the Tampa Bay Rays really trade for Ohtani knowing that he's not going to sign with them either? Because the Rays have a lot of great prospects and they are in it. If there's ever a time where they should fully go in, it's this year. But they're not going to trade away their number one prospect and, you know, whatever else the package entails when they know that Ohtani's not going to sign with them in free agency. One, because they won't offer him the money. They can't. They literally can't afford him. But he's not going to sign there. The Braves, I mean, maybe, but I don't think that's realistic either. You would have to trade him to a team that absolutely believes they can re-sign him if they're giving up their number one. Let's just say they're giving up their number one, number three, and number five prospects and something else. Like the Dodgers would do it. Because the Dodgers would sit there and go, well, yeah, we can offer him the $500 million. If that's what it's going to take, yeah, we can afford him. I don't know if the Braves could. I don't know if they could afford him. The Yankees could afford him, but like Terry said, they'll have a logjam with his contract, Stanton's, and Judge's. Like, that's just not going to work. The one team that I always felt like could go after him, and I think if he hits the market, you know, they will, is the Giants, because they have a ton of money to spend. I think it's pretty clear Ohtani wants to be somewhere warm weather, would probably prefer to be on the West Coast, closer to Japan. So, but I don't think they're going to trade for him. They're in a position this year where they could. They're hanging around the race. They're not completely out of it, but I don't think their farm system's good enough. So as much as I say, yes, the Angels should trade him, I have no idea where you send him other than the Dodgers. That might be the only team that could realistically acquire him at this year's deadline right now, have the proper package to send back, and also believe that they can re-sign him after this season. Otherwise, I'm not sure there is anyone else. So if I'm the Angels, yes, I do it, but it's going to be tough to find a trade partner.
So one thing I'm always curious about, and I don't know what the rules are as far as the CBA is concerned, but I'm wondering if other teams can negotiate with Ohtani's agents. Like, let's say the Angels and the Padres tentatively have the framework of a deal in place, but the Padres want assurance that they can sign Ohtani long-term. If they're going to give up this massive haul, they want some type of assurance that he'll sign for approximately this amount of money. And the only Red Sox example I could think of, and I think the reason why it's not a great comparison is I think this took place during the offseason, but when they traded for Adrian Gonzalez, and you're going back, you know, 12 years, Epstein knew that, yeah, it's going to cost about $150 million, and I think it was $154 million. And Gonzalez's camp assured Epstein that they weren't going to try to ask for A-Rod type money, you know, upper 200s. So, and then, you know, before the season started, the extension, you know, was signed. And that was the same year as Crawford as well. So I'm just wondering if some deals can be made. I'm not sure what the, and this is a different world now than 2011, but I'm just wondering. But when you look at the league as far as who can sign him, you know, the Dodgers are, you know, going to make a, you know, a big run for him. But the Padres offered Aaron Judge $400 million. So what's another $100 million for a guy like Ohtani? And here's the crazy thing. The Padres can trade Soto this summer, and the team that gets him is still going to have another year of control next year. So you can almost recoup that massive trade haul that you paid to get him. You probably won't get all of it back, but you'll get a couple of nice prospects in it. And instead of focusing on trying to extend him, now you can shift your focus to Ohtani. You know, you got Machado for a while, you got Bogaerts for a while, you got Tatis for a while, but I think the Padres, they're tired of being in the Dodger shadow, and they want to win a ring. Another team that's sick of being in both of their shadows is the San Francisco Giants. So it's on the West Coast, and yeah, we'll see. But those are the three teams I think that are going to be the front runners. I don't see anybody on the East Coast being in play, unless maybe the Phillies, I guess. But that's aiming really high.
Mike, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I was thinking, Jason, when you were talking about like who could actually acquire Ohtani this year, you look at the top five farm systems, at least at the beginning of the year, according to MLB.com, the Orioles were number one. They don't want to trade any of their prospects. They're not interested in actually getting better, or at least they haven't shown. So I don't see Ohtani going to the Orioles, or at least them giving up prospects for a rental. The Dodgers are second, so that's definitely one. The D-backs are third. Do you really see the D-backs? They're just in their window has just opened. I don't see them giving up a huge haul of prospects for 2023. I just don't see it. The Guardians, they never give up their prospects like that, and they're really not even in it right now. And then fifth is the Reds. You know, are the Reds, their window is just starting to open. Are they really going to give up prospects for a rental? I think the only team is the Dodgers. And I think, you know, the Dodgers weren't really aggressive in the offseason. They kind of were trying to reset their payroll, and they did that. But I think acquiring Ohtani would kind of show their fans and the rest of the baseball world that, you know what, we still are very much going for it. And I think the Dodgers are the slam dunk team. They've been willing to part with prospects in the past, and they just replenish their system every year. It's amazing. You know, they've traded for Machado, Trey Turner, Scherzer. They've made these massive deals in the past, and somehow they still have the second ranked farm system every year. I just don't understand how that works. But that's a credit to Friedman and his staff of finding players. But I think Ohtani is the answer for the Dodgers, and I think that is the only team that could acquire him at the deadline and give the Angels the prospect package that they would be looking for.
How much of a kick in the nuts would that be to the Angels that you have to trade Ohtani because you know you can't sign him? You just got called out for fans not caring about you and being the sideshow to the Dodgers in L.A., and then you turn around and trade Ohtani to the Dodgers. Yikes.
It would be similar to breaking up with your girlfriend or wife, and then she moves in next door. you get them all the time. Here's another crazy thing. I looked this up several minutes ago. We all agree it's going to be about $500 million, right? Probably. In 2017... the Marlins were sold to the Derek Jeter group. And I don't know who the big financial guru was in that group, but But it was sold to that group for $1.17 billion. So Ohtani would be worth half of a small market baseball team. That's insane, man. I'm just like, that's super nerdy, and you know, not all of our audience is going to really wrap their head around that, but it's just absolutely mind-boggling that he's gonna get that. But like I said, you got your three-hole guy who could be your Manny Ramirez, and at the same time you have your Pedro Martinez to start game one. He's all of it in one. It's crazy. And Micah, when you mentioned the Orioles, like the Orioles should be a team that's interested in him. And apparently there's been some family disputes amongst the owners, and apparently that's been resolved. But man, could you imagine like Ohtani going up to his translators and being like, "So tell me about Baltimore." You know, it's just like, it's not a destination city. Neither is DC. But perhaps that's why Soto didn't want to spend the next 15 years, you know, in a town like DC. But man, the Baltimore should be, you know, in on some of these guys.
If you put Ohtani on Baltimore, they could become the favorite to win the World Series. Like, I think that team is that good that I think they would be the favorite to represent the American League, at least. I really think they would do that. And it's just a shame that, you know, they could give up a package of prospects that no one else could match, and they still would have a really good farm system. But they're not interested in winning. They just want to sustain being good so that they can put fans in the seats, and that's fine. But why not try to win? I mean, those poor fans were put through the ringer for 5 years of just trash. And last year they didn't want to go for it. And they had a really good team, and then they just came up short. And this year they're actually better than they were last year. And they have all their players. I mean, they bring up a top 10 prospect, I swear, every week. It's amazing. And you know, are they even going to acquire anything at the deadline? I don't know. Like, we're saying Ohtani, but would they even acquire a Jordan Montgomery from the Cardinals? I don't even know if they would do that. Like, they're only going to acquire a player that has like 3 or 4 years of team control that fits into their mold for the future, which is a shame because, like I said, they are a really good team, but they are limited by their resources in terms of their pitching.
A sleeper team I just thought of is the one we just played, the Texas Rangers. Their front office is erratic enough to possibly pull something like that off. But you want to make up for the Jake DeGrom situation? Go get Ohtani.
Yeah, could do that. Although then you're trading within your own division, which that looks rough, even with the more balanced schedule. That's a hard one to sell to your fan base. Not only did we trade Shohei, we traded him to the division leader. It's like the Red Sox trading Bayo to the Yankees. That's a tough one.
That's true. It is a little bit more common, but perhaps not at that level, like A-list type players. But if a trade doesn't happen and he gets to free agency somehow, that would be nuts. But then for sure, I think Texas could back up the Brink truck, especially if the Astros go to the ALCS again.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, regardless if he's traded or not, I hope that he does hit the free agency market. The Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes is going to be a fun winter for baseball, because
if it gets that far,
hopefully he gets that far.
I hope so too. Yeah,
it's going to be wild. So be a lot of fun. So with that, we're going to wrap up this roundtable episode. Keep your eye out for the series recap for the Oakland series. The weekend crew will have you guys for that one Monday morning. So everyone, enjoy your weekend. Take care.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.